and it's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, tops and bottoms of all kinds, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. How you doing? How you doing, Mark Riley?
I'm doing great, man.
As you can tell, got a little frog in my throat. Don't know what's going on with that. It's getting cold here, so everything starts to shift, including my health a bit.
Yeah, it's like in the 20s this morning here.
I'm looking forward to vacation.
Oh, you and me both.
Friday.
Yeah.
You're flying all the way around the world,
man. Just across the pond, man. Across the pond. Kalo's the world traveler over here.
You okay? You all right? You all right with the flying?
I will be. I've been given meds.
Have you?
Yeah.
Let's walk through this. All right. Riley unmedicated on the plane. What happens? You sit down, you buckle in.
I observe plane etiquette. I don't go crazy around.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Turbulence really bothers me very, very much.
Yeah.
So I kind of sit there and I grab onto the sides of the seat whenever the plane buckles a little bit. But I usually listen to music. Listening to music, it takes care of everything.
Dude, I used to freak out so bad, it was unbelievable. Oh, my God. I have freaked out so bad.
I hope my daughter's not hearing this. You know, she's
like sweating. I used to sweat. One time I thought there was oil leaking on the wing.
Really?
I'm pretty sure there was. Have I told this story before? I feel like I have.
No.
Man, I used to have to stay up all night, and get drunk. Just so I could maybe sleep on the plane. That's how freaked out I was.
See, I can't... drinking doesn't help me sleep on planes. It just makes me feel sick.
Uh-huh.
So I don't drink. I don't even, when they come around with the little airline flasks or whatever.
That was actually one of the great moments where I realized I had a drinking problem was on an airplane. Because, to hell with the little airline bottles. Like, I went and bought a pint of Smirnoff once before a flight. And I'm sitting next to a woman who was, clearly a normal person.
Yeah.
Guy in the bar cart comes around. I'm like, I'll just take Bloody Mary mix. That's it. Just a can of Bloody Mary mix. And then I look at the woman sitting next to me. I pull out my pint. I'm like, huh? Thinking ahead. And she looks at me like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, you're right. Maybe there is something wrong with me. What kind of idiot can't make it through a plane flight? But anyways, the other story was I saw oil leaking out of something on the wing.
Really?
And I'm freaking the whole time, and then I'm listening to noises change. I still do that. Like, I've actually gotten used to, I know when they go up and they coast a little bit and they pick it up again. Like, I'm cool with all that, But there was a few years ago, I don't know when the fear went away, but I saw oil coming out of something, and I freaked out.
Did you alert the stew?
I did.
And?
Well, here's what happened. So I'm telling my wife at the time, my first wife, I'm like, that's not supposed to be like this. She's like, there's nothing wrong. I'm like, there's stuff coming out. There's stuff. stuff. You're not supposed to see stuff like gooping out of the wing over there. And she's like, well, what do you want me to do about it? I'm like, I don't know. I'm going to save everyone's life. So I go over to the stewardess guy. Yeah. And what do you call him? The
flight attendant.
Yeah. Good career choice.
Or steward.
No. And the steward. I don't know what they're called. They're flight attendants.
Yeah, flight attendants.
They're all nice people. I got no
problem. Oh, they're
problem.
Wonderful.
Except for the ones that are old and bitter. All right. So I go up to the flight attendant, this guy, and I'm like, dude, all right, don't freak out, but there's oil coming out of the wing. All right. And this is what pissed me off, man. He looks at me without even checking nothing, and he just goes, oh, no, that's normal. And I'm like, you're not even going to try to fool me. You're not even going to come take a look. You're not going to, go into the pilot's cabinet and act like you're concerned. You're just going to, try and blow me off like that.
And?
What do you mean, and? That was it. We didn't crash. I'm here. Everything's cool.
Oh, but I mean, did he say, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing? I'm blowing you off?
No, but, I didn't say that to him. I'm just like, what was I going to do at that point? I had to put it to rest. See, that's the thing about.
Did you stay up the rest of the flight, though?
Yeah, of course I did.
Oh.
I stayed up monitoring the leak. someone had to do it. That was my job on that flight.
I understand. I was monitoring
the leak. If anyone had any questions, I would have been able to tell them the exact flow and how long it had been going on for and the color, the discharge.
Well, see, my wife loves flying entirely too much.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she's one of those people, she loves the going up and the coasting and the whole 9 yards. And I'm sitting there, wired to my seat. Yeah, velcroed to my seat like a little girl. And she's like, oh, look at that.
My wife's like that with roller coasters. She'll want to go on any ride that, you know, drops out of the sky. And she's like, come on, it'll be fun. So there I am, you know, with that weird
heart in your mouth.
Well, it's like, you know, I'm not smiling. It's a look of terror that can look like a smile just if the air velocity's right and it's peeling my face back. And she's just like, you know, just swinging around, having a great time. And I'm like, all I think on those kind of rides is that it's going to be done in 2 seconds. Yeah. You know, 35 seconds, we're going to be through this, and I will have survived something.
Yeah.
I don't know if we'd be stronger or wiser, but I will have gotten through it. My wife will, you know, not be mad at me for not going on the dumb ride. Oh, my God. Let's try this new thing. You want to? Every day we talk about some of the news stories that reflect the poopy job. Poopy job that President Bush is doing. And just how rapidly our world is swirling down the crapper. Incredibly, despite the fact that we have 3 hours every day, we aren't able to get to all of the stories. So here's just a quick rundown of some of the stories we weren't able to get to today. And some of them we will actually be able to get to. That represents just a 24-hour snapshot of the Bush storm. Okay. Investors Business Daily headline, Bush Economic Conference seen as public relations event. Analysts, including some prominent conservatives, say today's policy summit will have little or no meat to it, consisting mostly of people who already agree with what Bush wants to do.
Yes, men. Nothing but yes,
That's
men.
That's right. Associated Press headline, companies rapidly cutting health benefits. A study found that 8% of companies with more than 1,000 workers said they had cut retiree health benefits this year. 11% said they expect to do so next year. So you're on your own, Grandpa.
You're on your own. And the numbers of companies with more than 200 people that actually give retirees benefits at all has been dropping like a stone over the last 20 years.
Good luck with everything. Hope you can make it to wherever you're going. New York Times headline, retirees are paying more for health benefits, study says. A new study shows this goes with the other one, that retirees who get health benefits from their former employers saw the cost of their premiums shoot up an average of 25% this year alone. So if you still get your health coverage, you're going to pay a little bit more. So I hope you got some money saved from your Social Security. Oh, that's on the way out, too.
Mm-hmm.
Headline, Washington Post, Bush allies may defect over fiscal proposals.
Yes.
The AARP says Bush's plan would make Social Security worse. The National Retail Federation is opposing a national sales tax, and health lobbyists are fighting to keep tax breaks for health insurance. You want to read a couple there, Mark?
Yeah. And by the way, pay close attention to that defection over fiscal proposals. There's a lot of defections, particularly among Bush allies, even in the Congress of the United States. Associated Press, the U.S. trade deficit swells to a record $55 billion. America's trade deficit in October was the biggest ever as imports, particularly Chinese imports, racked up record sales in America. And you know what? It's not going to stop because Christmas time, guess who's going to buy all those $30 DVDs and guess where they come from?
Everybody in America is going to buy them and they come from China.
There you go.
Do I win? I win?
You win.
Oh, is there a whistle or something?
There
or
must
a
be.
Never mind.
Drum roll?
No, I got
come
it.
Come on.
It's already over.
Oh.
Keep going.
All right. The Peoria Journal Star headline, White House can't explain lurking trade imbalance. This, of course, is related to the last story. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Economic Research Service, next year will be the first time in 5 decades that America has imported more food than it's exported. Just 4 years after American farmers and food exporters enjoyed a $13.6 billion trade surplus, how would all of the big breadbasket we have in the middle of the country are we bringing in more food than we're sending out? That's ridiculous.
I know. It is ridiculous, and it's all Bush's fault.
That's
how about
right.
that? Associated Press headline, Marine from Columbine High School killed in Iraq. 21-year-old Lance Corporal Greg Rund, who was a freshman at Columbine High School in Colorado when two students killed 13 people there, was killed in combat in Iraq on Saturday.
Yeah.
Associated Press headline, soldier says he spoke to Rumsfeld about armor in 2003. A former Tennessee National Guardsman says he told Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld about inadequate vehicle armor in September of 2003, and that Rumsfeld replied that he was working on it.
You know what? I think Rumsfeld's mama probably told him about those problems with the armor in Iraq, and he just, I'm working on it. We go to war with the army you have. The lamest excuses in this part of the century.
Is a related headline, New York Times headline, cargo flights added to cut risky land trips. The growing problem of roadside bombings and ambushes in Iraq has gotten so bad, the Air Force now sharply expanding its cargo flights to avoid having to haul supplies over Iraq's dangerous roads in those Humvees that are unarmored. We can see you from up here. Good luck.
Yeah, right.
Thank God we're in the Air Force and not the Marines. So we'll get to more of these in a minute. We will come back after this with we're going to explore some of these stories later in the show, and we'll do some more of these at the top of the next hour. And coming up next, we've got, of course, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, with the Pashman Rules segment for today. It's Air America Radio, 16 past the hour.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley, because two Marks are better than one. Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Wow, who's that? What's that song? What could that be? 21 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning's Edition.
Good morning.
Yeah, who is that artist? Maybe I'll have to ask Dan Pashman.
Donny Osmond?
Yeah, maybe that's who it is. Modern life has grown increasingly hectic these days, and we here at Morning's Edition, we want to help. Now in the studio is a man known to spend an inordinate amount of time pondering subjects both large and small, so much so that we have decided it constitutes a philosophy, which we like to call Pashman's Rules. So now, here is our editorial producer, Dan Pashman.
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good morning, Dan.
I keep trying to get the... I want that sax, but I want the bump right there, Chris. Next time, man, I want to go... And then Dan goes, good morning. It's all about me now.
Yahtzee.
Welcome to Pashman in the Morning.
So what do you want?
How are you guys doing?
Fine.
Good. You know,
can't tell.
I
yeah, it's like that. We're going to pretend like we haven't spent the last 3.5 hours together.
I thought today it might be a good idea to, we're in the Christmas shopping season, the holiday shopping season.
Yeah.
Hanukkah just ended last night, but, still some Hanukkah gifts to be given and Christmas time coming up. And so I wanted to give some shopping tips out to the people out there.
Okay.
I'm sure you guys have some gifts to buy and stuff.
I bought one yesterday.
Oh, yeah? What'd you get?
I bought one for my wife. I don't think she's listening, but you know what I did, though?
Yeah.
I was kind of proud of is that I bought it at the video. It's a DVD.
Right.
But I bought it from the guy, the small family-owned business, Costa, and his son, who own the small video store in my neighborhood, and I bought a big box set from him. I probably paid a little extra, but I felt good about buying it at a family-owned small business.
And well, you should.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Good job.
That's my little point. That's my little point.
Is that part of your rules, Pastor? Because if not, you need to leave now, because Mara's got better rules.
That's not part of my rules.
What was it?
What if she's listening? I'll screw it all up.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, the problem with the small business, though, is sometimes you'd be like, yeah, do you have the Ben Stiller box of Ben Stiller? And they're like, Ben who?
Right.
the problem with that is...
They're like, yeah, we got it. It's $99.
Yeah, but I don't mind paying if they have it. The only thing you run into, unless a small business is a creatively stocked small business that deals in a sort of a niche market.
Right.
If you're just looking for general items, a lot of times they don't carry a lot of stuff.
Right.
I'm stepping all over the Pashman rules.
First rule of shopping. Mm-hmm. All right. There are some stores that are good to shop at. Some stores I refuse to shop at. One such store which I refuse to shop at is Abercrombie & Fitch.
Good for you.
Because they have mannequins that are wearing two collared shirts at the same time.
Are they hot, though? I like hot mannequins.
I don't care what they look all like. Right, right. I refuse to shop at any store where the mannequins have two collared shirts on at the same time.
It's there goes that advertising.
Two collared shirts, meaning like a polo shirt and a button-up shirt?
If it has two collars on, two different shirts, both of which have collars... I will not shop in
that
store.
But what if it's an undershirt? Oh, okay, I get it. Okay,
all right, because that's just ridiculous. Yeah, nobody dresses like that.
Right, except for that mannequin.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my first rule.
Okay.
All right. I got another rule general for shopping, whether you're buying it for someone else or you're trying clothes on or looking at clothes.
Yeah.
I call it the 10-second rule. If you need more than 10 seconds to decide whether or not you like this item, then you shouldn't get it.
Right.
All right? You know, people obsess over their clothes, like, oh, do I like it or not like it? What if I turn this way in the mirror? What if I turn that way? What if I look at it just like this? What if I think about this? Screw that.
Yeah.
All right? You end up buying stuff, then you never wear it.
Right.
And you force yourself to like something.
No, you got
to
have that immediate bonding.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you don't have the immediate bonding, don't do it.
Correct.
If you got to think too long, you're not going to wear it.
The 10-second rule of clothes purchasing.
What about buying for somebody else? I thought we were talking about presents.
Yeah.
That, too. I mean, that's
harder, though.
But you might be getting a gift certificate or something, go out and do shopping for yourself. But it is harder for other people, but still, like, if you're buying clothes for someone else, it should still be 10 seconds. Either you know or you don't know person's going
to
like it.
It's so hard to buy clothes for women.
Yeah.
It is.
Man, Wait till you have to buy some clothes for some women, Pashman.
Oh, yeah. God. When I was my first girlfriend, back in college, we almost killed each other. I didn't kill her, but I yelled at her for 2 days. Only because she didn't like what I bought her. I couldn't believe it. I spent, like, some serious jack on this sweater. that I thought would look great on her. And, like, you know, you work up to it, she opens the box, and there's that face of, like,
I was like, what?
Oh,
this?
And it was just awful. So I screamed and I yelled, hoping that she would fit the sweater. there was nothing I could do to change her personality.
See, and did you spend more than 10 seconds looking at that sweater?
You know, I got to be honest with you. I transgressed. What I did was, instead of not spending more than 10 seconds, I just sort of said, this is expensive. She should like it.
Right.
I was trying to buy her.
Well, that can work like half the time.
Only with jewelry, dude. And only with rings. Well, even jewelry, it's touch and go. Unless, all right. Yeah, go ahead. I got more, but I don't want to, you know, I want Pashman to finish it.
Well, another rule that I have for the holidays, as far as when you're giving gifts, I don't use wrapping paper.
Yeah.
You know, especially you liberals out there, you want to save some paper. Wrapping paper is such a waste.
Yeah.
To me, I really don't like wrapping paper. It's like people get all worried gusting up these presents, and then it takes 3 seconds to tear all the shreds.
Wait a minute. That means you really don't buy presents for kids, do you? Because kids deserve wrapping paper. No. Come on now. They deserve a little wrapping, but they deserve not to see the Tonka toy out in the open, man. What's wrong with you?
I'm not saying...
Child molester?
I'm not saying...
Cashman's getting some flack today.
First of all...
The rules aren't going so smoothly here. We're not playing by your rule book today, I guess.
If anybody wraps presents, Riley, it's child molesters.
What? Well, yeah, right. See, because I don't wrap any presents myself. My wife takes care of all of that. Yeah. But the bottom line
is... I picture you at home, Riley, sitting in this big armchair with a cigar in your mouth and just like...
Yeah, having her do everything.
Right.
Sometimes you get the feeling that if it weren't for Riley's wife, you'd show up just wearing sneakers.
Yeah, probably.
Know, my wife didn't wake up. Sorry.
It's like the dream. But, Riley, I'm not saying I don't wrap the presents. I recommend that you use newspapers with cool pictures or magazine clippings with cool pictures so that the present still looks cool, but you're recycling paper instead of creating more garbage. It's the environmentally friendly way to give gifts.
Yeah, what I like to do is I actually don't wrap them. I just take the box, and I'll take the receipt right on the present, and before my wife wakes up on Christmas morning, I'll throw it at her in the bed and wake her up with it. Here, here's your present.
This costs $75. You better like it.
So I see, Maren, you like to sort of intimidate people into liking the gifts you give them.
Well, now I ask her what she wants, and she sits down, and she writes the list.
Right.
And I get her everything on the list and one or two things that I decide on, and we're all set. Because it really comes down to that. What do you need? What are you going to use? I never need anything but clothes, as you can tell. I mean, how often do I wear the same sweater and shirt?
Yeah, that person at Jimmy Tingle's on Friday night.
What was that story?
Nick's wife. She complimented. She's like, oh, he's a really good dresser. I was like, yeah, I spend every day with him. The guy wears the same sweater every freaking day.
I have two that are just
two
a
sweaters.
Little different. That was good, Dan. Thank you.
My
thank
pleasure.
You. If any of you want Dan Pashman's help living your lives, because he's got time, send your questions. With the subject line, Ask Pashman to Sedition at AirAmericaRadio.com. We'll be back with Iraq.
In the latest.
Morzu Daragahi from Iraq after this.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Hey!
Hoping we're going to try and get Borzu on the phone from Baghdad and see what's going on there, get the pulse of the world. Right now it's time for the bomb pilot, which for some reason, Raymond was dressed as a cop, but he wasn't dressed as like a real cop. He was dressed as sort of a village people cop. Like it was,
oh, wow.
Things were a little too tight. It looked like he'd been dancing.
Oh.
You know, that guy baffles me all the time. But again, we have Bernie Kerik's Palm Pilot. Here's Bernie's schedule for today. 6 a.m. Wake up. Check parameter for intruders. Taser anything that moves. And that means you, Channel 7. 9 a.m. Ah, free time. Pull out the old Andrew Dice Clay records. Hickory Dickory Dock. Oh! 10 a.m. 1 to 1 p.m. Sit around in my undershirt. This is much better than being Homeland Security Chief. 2 p.m. Check answering machine to see if any of my girlfriends called. Note, why haven't they called? I'm Bernie frickin' Kerik. Oh! 4 p.m. Lunch with the fellas. The Chin, Johnny Two Times, Pete the Killer, Little Petey, Big Little Petey, Joey No Nads, and the Honorable Rudolph Giuliani. Note, put on a shirt. 7 p.m., dinner, taser sausage roll. Ah. Note, take off shirt. 9 p.m., go to Bada Bing, see if any of the dancers recognize me. I'm Bernie frickin' Kerik.
Oh!
You know, there's a lot going on with him. Mark, you know, here in New York, I guess because he was the police commissioner here, Bernie Kerik has just, they won't leave him alone. Every day brings out some new revelations. Now there are questions about exactly who he used as contractor to renovate an apartment in Riverdale where he was having trouble paying rent on another apartment in the same building in Riverdale.
There's something about him that just, he's got a clown factor going.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? As intimidating as he is, and what a little thug that he is, and, you know, everything about him, there's just something that you want to poke him a little bit.
Well, you know, the other part of this, Mark, is the incredible incompetence shown by the Bush administration in not properly vetting this guy long before his nomination. The New York Times has a big piece today by Elizabeth Buehmiller that talks about the process that was used and why they didn't find any of this stuff.
Now, what, was it because, you know, he took Giuliani's word? Is Giuliani really the whole responsible for this? That Bush just said, is this guy all right?
No, it was the perceived enthusiasm of George W. Bush himself for Bernie Kerik, not just Rudy Giuliani.
He liked the guy.
He liked the guy. He thought that this was a guy they wanted to have happen. But what's interesting in this piece,
Bush was like, it'd be fun to have him around, a little bald guy with a mustache.
Yeah. The one person in the White House who knew the most about Bernie Kerik's background was not consulted by Alberto Gonzalez's office. And, of course, Gonzalez, who's the attorney general designate, is the guy that was in charge of the vetting. Francis Townsend knew more about Bernie Kerik than anybody else in the White House. The problem with Frances Townsend was she was up for the same job, so they didn't consult her about Kerik.
Right.
So, as it turns out, she probably could have raised at least a couple of red flags that would have led to some kind of deeper scrutiny of his background and his past. Apparently, there were hours of interviews that were conducted by Gonzalez himself with Kerik in a very confrontational fashion to get some stuff to drop. But, hey, you're dealing with a cop. You're dealing with a guy who made his living interrogating people. You think you interrogating him is going to reveal something?
Well, yeah, especially a guy that, you know, is such a big proponent of interrogation.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't realize he was in the presence of a professional, maybe.
Well, yeah, I guess not. And the other thing is, of course, now there are questions about whether or not he filled out all the disclosure forms he was supposed to when he was vetted for the gig training the Iraqi troops.
Right, so you think this is going to stand in the way of Gonzalez's plan to have an Abu Ghraib in every town, Abu Ghraib in every state?
It could, and of course, these questions are going to come up during his confirmation now.
How's a guy named Bernie not going to take a few hits? Anyone named Bernie?
Bernard to you.
Is he a Jewish guy? Bernie Kerik?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't want to speculate about his ethnicity without knowing.
We don't know.
He came up in North Jersey.
Yeah. I just assume that most people named Bernie are Jewish. I don't know why. And it's not a bad thing. And I'm just curious. I'm sorry. You were going to say something. Your speculation, I want to hold you to it because I like when you speculate into the future. You think that Gonzalez is going to be held somewhat accountable by the people that are the confirmation.
By the confirmationers. I don't know that this will stop him from being confirmed. What it does do, though, and this is an ongoing process, it cripples Rudy Giuliani's stock inside the Beltway right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was the guy that pushed Bernie Kerik on George W. Bush, supposedly. And Bush, aside from liking the guy, probably reading that quote about, oh, thank God George W. Bush is president. I don't even know whether he actually said it or not.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, Bush liked him. Giuliani sponsored him. That was supposed to be enough.
Right.
And obviously, this is yet another instance, Mark, of the Bush administration cutting corners on behalf of somebody that the president likes. This isn't the first time this kind of thing has happened.
Malignant cronyism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's look at a list of some of friends of George.
Yeah.
People like Ken Lay from Enron. Rick Perry, who's now, of course, the governor of Texas. The other guy that was involved in the Swift Boat Troop for Veterans for Troops.
Paul O'Neill?
Yeah.
No.
The guy who actually paid for the ad to be done.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. Big fundraiser for Bush.
Yeah.
The guy, you know, all of these different people, they form part of this circle that are his people, which, by the way, is exactly what he's got happening at this summit that he's doing. What is that, today and tomorrow?
Yeah, surrounded himself with a bunch of corporate yes men to say, yes, that's a genius policy.
That's brilliant. We can
sure,
do that.
Sure,
yeah.
We can put caps on malpractice suits, and we can privatize Social Security, and we can make magic money.
Magic money. And, you know, I think that somebody somewhere ought to compare how much all of these CEOs that are going to be coming around Bush for the next couple of days, how much more money, how many times more money they make as CEOs than their average employees make.
Now, let's be honest here. Let's get back to Bernie.
Yeah, let's get back to Bernie.
No, no, I mean, we don't have to. But as a police commissioner, as somebody who's lived in New York for years, I mean, what was your feelings about him as a police commissioner in general?
See, here's the thing about Bernie Kerik. Bernie Kerik followed a guy named Howard Safer, who a lot of people, including myself, had big problems with.
Yeah.
Howard Safer, they used to call him Hollywood Howard, because at one point they showed him out at the Oscars shaking hands with somebody.
I remember that.
Yeah.
He was a consultant as well, and he also had friends in high places, and he went on to work in L.A., didn't he?
Bratton was Giuliani's first police commissioner, who he fell out with. He's now the police commissioner in L.A.
Got
now, Safer may be working in L.A. because he's one of these high-paid security consultants. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which is probably what Bernie's going to end up doing.
Sure. Like Kevin Spacey did in L.A. Confidential.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, all of this stuff that's coming out about Bernie Kerik now is no bar for him working in the private sector. You know that. It's only guys like you and me. If we have a jaywalking beef, we'll never work in this business again.
Right. But he's like, I thought he was a spokesman for a taser, for the Taser Corporation or something. He sells tasers.
Yeah, that's how he really made his fortune. From what I understand, he's working.
Pimping tasers.
And remember that this is a former New York City police commissioner, a guy who was here on September 11th. That is a tremendous chit to throw into the game when you're out selling something. Doesn't matter what you're selling. The bottom line is you're Bernie Kerik. Just like you said earlier.
Frickin' Bernie Kerik.
I'm frickin' Bernie Kerik. Buy my tasers. Of course. These police departments all over the country who look at New York with almost 40,000 cops and say, my God, they got an army there.
Yeah.
And this is Bernie Kerik, the guy that, you know, helped save New York during September 11th. Of course we're going to buy tasers from him. That's why they hired him.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's still working for Rudy Giuliani. He is still a consultant to Giuliani Partners.
Yeah. Bernie, could you get my bags?
Yeah.
Anyway, Clutch. Hey, Clutch Larson, what's going on? Is Borzu, we can't get Borzu on the phone. He's in Iraq. He's in Baghdad. He's a reporter. What could he have to do?
Oh, nothing.
I mean, I don't understand why we can't get Borzu Dargahi on the phone from Iraq. And he's a reporter in Iraq. There can't be anything going on there. I mean, what is he, being rude? I will be back in a second, hopefully with Borzu, maybe, maybe not. If not, perhaps we'll do
a few things we can do.
Dude, we've got so much stuff here. I don't know. I'm having a nervous breakdown. Sarah America Radio, it's 43 past the hour.
I'm Reverend Al Sharpton, and you're listening to Morning Sedition. Talk about the issues we're fighting for our lives here on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. It's the first Stone song that ever, this is the one that introduced me to the Rolling Stones. Got me
God,
going.
You're young.
And then, they were halfway done by the time I woke up to them. I mean, they were more than halfway done. I mean, we don't need to talk about the Stones. What I want to know, Riley, is are you having your wife buy her Christmas present from you for her?
Yeah, why not? Doesn't everybody? Yeah. Hi, honey.
Get yourself
a little something.
Yeah. That's easy.
No, I mean, as a matter of fact, we actually had a brief discussion about this yesterday.
Yeah.
You know, like, what is it that you want?
Yeah.
What am I supposed to be getting you? And I'm, you know, my wife is a sweet woman. She said, look, you know, the trip to England is really my Christmas present. Oh, okay, I'm off the hook then.
Dude, I got the list right here.
Oh, you got an old man.
No, yeah.
Purple list, no less.
My
a
wife
purple stick-em.
She doesn't screw around here. One, she wants an iPod mic for recording sets, but that also hinges on the iPod itself.
Uh-huh.
The 40 or 20, what is it, MB... Megabyte, 40 or 20 megabyte iPod, the one with organizer.
Yeah.
Grand Theft Auto San Andreas for PlayStation 2. She wants a facial at Bliss, of course.
Whoa.
She wants a DVD of Return of the King. She wants a DVD of the Ben Stiller Show.
Wait till you have kids.
Wait till I have kids.
Yeah, man.
She bought a Christmas tree. So, you know, me, no menorah in my sad Queens apartment. Spending Hanukkah with my cats.
Do you live in one of those buildings that, like, everybody has decorations outside except, like, maybe one or two apartments?
No.
Nobody does.
I don't. My building's kind of odd. My neighbor, I'm not even sure she's alive anymore.
I
have to knock on her door. I don't know what's going on in there. A lot of the people in my building are Hindu and Muslim. Uh-huh. There's not a lot of... there was no decorations out front. There's a couple old timers that lived there for a million years, and then there's one with the screaming problem downstairs. But anyways, let's deal with this. The President Bush awarded the Medal of Freedom on Tuesday to CIA Director George Tenet, former CIA Director, former Iraqi Administrator L. Paul Bremer, and retired General Tommy Franks. He lauded all three. You know, Tenet. Can you believe Tenet? He lauded Tenet for advancing the cause of liberty in Afghanistan, I guess by letting 9/11 happen.
Ran Tenet out. Is this his ultimate reward?
Yeah, this is his gift for the oversight that allowed 3,000 Americans to die.
Yeah. Nice work,
and thus, you know, provide us the opportunity to go to Afghanistan and liberate the Afghanis and their opium business.
And then, of course, there was the little business in Iraq, which
might
not have happened quite as quickly had it not been for September 11th.
And Paul Bremer for facilitating such tremendous contracts for Halliburton and military contractors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right now, and Tommy Franks... General Tommy Franks.
Tommy Franks, a pliant military guy. Guy doesn't, come up with any, nasty objections like we need 350,000 troops like Shinseki. You notice Shinseki wasn't even invited to the ceremony, was he?
Shinseki, who was right about needed to be done.
And
Franks, who was, spearheaded the wrong movement into Iraq.
Well, I mean, look, Franks did what Bush wanted him to do. Franks did what Rumsfeld wanted him to do. For that, I guess he should get a medal, right?
From Bush,
yeah.
I guess it pretty much it just means that, he can give it to whoever he wants. I mean, last year it was, they've given it to, to great people. I wouldn't say we have any great people here, would you? They've given it to Martin Luther King. They've given it to Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
Who, the things he did for Afghanistan.
I hear Shaquille O'Neal is up for one.
Come on.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know who they give them. I don't even know what the criteria is.
Was there a moment where, didn't you think that, that Bush was, like, fighting the urge to, as he was putting around Tenet's neck, to, like, kind of pull it.
Till the Sandman came. Yeah. You know what? I really think they waited until after, and Bush started joking with his staff about making cutting remarks about Tenet.
Yeah. Well, I just don't, I don't understand what it means. It means that there's no barometer of integrity for this medal. I mean, apparently, I don't know if it ever meant something, but I mean, it did go to the Pope. It did go to Rosa Parks. It has, it has been, there was something noble about the presentation of this medal. And all these guys, from where we're sitting, are not worthy.
Not worthy, but this is George Bush's world. He decides who's worthy.
The fake word. It's the Bush reality. Yeah.
He's got a mandate.
Yes.
Damn it.
No, he doesn't.
He's got political capital to
spend. There's no mandate.
And he intends to spend it.
There's no mandate.
I know there's no mandate. But see, people, this little 3 million vote margin he's got will probably be 5 to 10 million by the end of his 4 years. I mean, that's the way he operates.
Jonathan Clutch Larson has entered the studio, which is unusual during the middle of a broadcast. He's entered the studio with email.
Must be
important.
Uh-oh.
Oh. We got an email from Borzu Daragahi. Phones are not working in Baghdad. Sorry.
Damn.
Are we going to take this from him?
Yeah. Never heard any of those nice flip phones we got here? Didn't call anywhere.
This is Air America Radio.
Yeah.
This excuse will not wash.
Yeah, we spared no expense to put you on the air before, Borzu.
The dog ate his phone. What's next? Insurgents took my phone.
Yeah. Okay. It's not like you're in New York where you have cellular problems because of the height of the buildings, for God's sake.
I'm busting him. It's fine, Borzu, if you're
listening. Safe, Borzu.
Yeah,
that's
be careful. The guy just got off his honeymoon. He's back in Iraq. That's got to be a mind blower.
Well, I tell you what. I admire Borzu. I really do. I admire those people who will go over to that kind of a situation at the kind of risk that he and guys like Mick Ware face every day and report the truth. Because, some people just over there, I guess, doing their whole embedded thing. And you know how that is.
Here's a silly story. Can we do a silly story?
Sure.
It's a pretty silly show. Why not? Costa Rica, San Jose, Costa Rica. Osama bin Laden, take notes, you wouldn't be safe in Costa Rica. A startled taxi driver shot and wounded a jokester wearing a plastic mask of the Al-Qaeda leader, police said Tuesday.
That happened in Costa Rica?
Yeah.
I thought nobody in Costa Rica was allowed to have a gun.
Dude, some guy just, stuff with the dude. All right, Lionel Arias, 47, told police he was playing a practical joke by donning the bin Laden mask, toting his pellet rifle, and jumping out to scare drivers on a narrow street in his hometown.
Yeah, don't joke around, pal.
Some taxi driver just stopped and got out of the car.
Busted a cap.
Popped two into his stomach, man.
Two in his stomach?
Yeah.
Oh, and that really hurts.
Yeah, I think...
Not that I've ever been shot.
It doesn't say that he's in critical condition, but...
I mean, he lived, though. I mean, he's not dead.
But that's one of those ideas, okay, once you put the mask on and you get your robe on, you got your pellet gun, that's the way you look in the mirror and you go, yeah, maybe this isn't a good idea to go out on the street dressed as, you know, one of the most hated men in history with a gun.
That's what people, for people with governors in their brains, people that say, you know what, this is too far. Yeah. Obviously, this guy didn't have that particular, and there are a lot of people.
Our president doesn't have that particular governor in his brain.
No, he doesn't, and with his mandate, he doesn't need it.
With his mandate and his little Pinochet gray waistcoat?
You know, I would hope that somebody, maybe Karen Hughes or somebody, well, Karen Hughes has no sense of style either, but you would think somebody would have pointed out to him how much like a Chilean dictator that thing makes him look. I mean, come on.
I think they did, and he said, perfect.
Perfect, yeah, right.
Exactly,
no problem.
The message I wanted to convey.
And you're meaning that to say what?
I want them to know who's in charge.
Wow. So I don't know.
Yeah. So we got some other stuff to talk about here. I think that I'd like to talk about these stories about the Christmas. Did you know that Christmas is actually the
deadliest time of the year?
But not suicides and car accidents. I mean, literally just people dying.
Dying, yeah.
Just people like, oh, thank you for the... you know, I mean, just literally...
Heart attacks and stuff.
Heart attacks, high blood pressure, people's heads just exploding. I guess from the stress and the fun and the fat and the food, who the hell knows? But, you know, Christmas is the deadliest time of the year, which kind of, you know, coincides with some other stories we're going to cover over in the next hour about the fight to get Christ back in Christmas.
Oh, man, you know, these people need to stop this, but we'll get to that. That stuff is really starting to get me angry.
The Christo-fascist zombie brigades and their legal representations, they are.
There's the fact that Barbara Streisand just got out the hospital, too.
I know. I hope she's okay.
Me, too.
She had a polyp removed.
From her colon.
Well, here's the... not from her colon?
Yes.
It was?
Yes.
I thought it was from her... All right, so here's the agenda. Cite Bernie Kerik as proof that not all Republicans are slaves to the idea of abstinence. 2. File sexual harassment suit against Jack Frost for nipping at your nose. Because no means no. 3. It's award season. Nominate yourself for best something. Do it. 4. Tell kids that just because the Grinch is a gay green man who lives with his dog and hates Christmas, that doesn't make him a bad person. Merely a New Yorker. 5. Today's phrase is dropping into conversation. I'm just going to start using euros for everything, man. The dollar is finished, dude. Over. Wake up, people. Wake up.
You're scaring me.
Yeah, what do we got coming up?
Coming up, of course, we've got your dream diary.
Yeah.
And... we're going to talk a little bit about Christmas. We're going to talk a little bit about Bush's gaggle of idiots and the policy summit coming up, and much more here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, liberal Christians, Buddhists, the Baha'i, and the Wiccans, Muslims and Lutherans, and of course, snotty evangelicals that listen to deceive, and also all you good evangelicals that listen to love and share and forgive. Good morning to you, Mark Riley. It is the holiday season, my friend.
Good morning.
Is it the holiday season or is it the Christmas season? Say it, Riley. What do you think?
I think it's the holiday season. I got a little shook up the other day because I found out, you remember that plane crash that Dick Ebersol was in?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The one that it didn't quite get off the ground, just slammed off in the end.
Yeah, and his son was killed.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Well, his son went to the same high school I did and was in the audience when I spoke at the school right after the election.
Oh, man.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of, his name was Teddy, I think.
Uh-huh.
Teddy Ebersole.
Well, that's sad, man. That's sad. So when you were in high school, let's try and get to the bottom of this drum corps thing. When did you start with this drum corps thing? Now, here's the deal, okay?
Oh, that's what it is. Way predates high school.
Well, wait, let me just understand something. Apparently, I came down, you and Kayla were already in here.
Yeah.
I walk in, and it sounds like some sort of rehearsal tape. It sounds like some... Is that it?
Yeah. That's it.
That's not what was playing when I was in here. There was something else playing.
A different track, but it's the same group of people.
Yeah, but this sounds like an actual tune.
Okay, no, these are exercises.
So now, what do you
think? One of the kids probably made that up.
Now, am I wrong, but does this not get annoying after a certain point in time?
No, absolutely not. Not if you're a drummer.
But
this
wait.
Love.
Okay, so you're sitting there, you're listening, it's like, okay, this is great.
But I play it over and over again.
But wouldn't this be also the appropriate response? Could you stop it? Could you please stop it?
Only after 10 o'clock.
Hey! I'm trying to sleep down here. What the hell is... I'm calling the police! Am I wrong?
Well, see, here's the thing. When we used to do this when I was a kid, we would practice on Randall's Island. You know where Randall's Island is?
All right, so you're away from people.
We're away from people. Nobody to complain but motorists on the Triborough Bridge here in New York.
In the river.
Yeah, exactly. And it works perfectly there.
But here we go. Please, it is 2 in the morning. I'm sorry. No, I can get off on it. I think it's groovy.
Yeah, I mean, this is something. I will sit and watch guys like this rehearse for hours on end. They'll do this for like 3 hours out of a day.
It's
just
funny.
Do nothing but exercise.
You're high, man.
Till they're ripped, burned, man.
You got to be out high. You got to be smoking over here.
No, man. No. Not these kids. They don't have it in them. believe me.
Even deadheads leave during space. Okay?
No.
When the drums start and Jerry starts noodling, the deadheads go pee. All right? Right? You're right. This is about the time we're like, all right, drum solo, cool. We got time. We go get a beer and a hot dog, and then we'll come back, and the main guy will be on. But this is it.
No. This is getting ready to compete. That's all this is. This is just rehearsal.
Okay, so what does it mean when they compete?
Well, when they compete, they go into contests, and they're judged against each other.
Is it like that movie?
Yeah, it's a little bit like that, but that's a different kind of competition. Drumline, you're talking
about. Yeah.
It's a different kind of competition. This is graded on certain elements of performance, and you get a score. You get an overall score.
So is this the kind of thing you're like, I'm just going to run some, you know, I'm going to do little things around the house?
No.
Do you dance at all to this?
No. I just sit and listen to it and love it. I've always loved it. I've always loved the sound of drums.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys, because I understand the point of what they're doing, I just love it. I can sit there and watch it for hours.
The point. Okay. So do we get to that part?
The point is to sound as one. You got 20 guys, and the point of the 20 guys is to sound as if each distinct section sounds like one person.
Okay.
That's the point.
All right. Well, I get it now. And I do like it. I used to listen to some John Hassell music and some of the more experimental
stuff.
You do, right?
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Emil Richards.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely understand the groove.
Yeah.
I got to listen to more stuff. I listened to that Ted Leo CD the other day. I got to bring my CDs back from L.A.
Why? Oh, yeah, you do have to bring them. But you're going to be out there on Friday anyway, so you have a big collection to listen to.
Well, yeah, I know, but like I don't listen to them. But I need to bring some more out here. Maybe I should get an iPod. I don't know. I didn't want to be part of that, you know?
What?
Why are you looking at me like that, Kayla? What kind of ass
he's
are you?
He missed the iPod
here. Not to get on board with the thing everybody's doing.
This is Captain Connectivity over here.
Hey, it's like, why not have every song that you own in your entire collection and then some with you at all times, just in case you have a few extra days to listen to music? I mean, I get it. You know, I guess I don't listen to that much music, but if I had an iPod, I'd put it in a little iPod cradle and I could just listen to it all day long, right? And it just so you...
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But it's better than a CD player.
I know. I guess, you know, maybe I'm getting older. I don't know. I don't wear headphones anymore. I've gotten... Whoa, back up.
No, but I mean,
take that.
I've grown to. I actually have consciously said, like, if I'm on the train or in the gym or everything else, I'm like, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to deal with this in reality time. Like, I'll be on the treadmill and I want to hear gym sounds. That's all I want to hear. I want to hear the nasty noise of the treadmill going. I want to hear the seven different televisions going. I want to hear the guy at the end going. You know, I want to hear gym sounds. I want to be
the guy in your gym.
I want to be the present. Yeah, well, no, yeah, women do it too sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
They grunt. I want to be in the present on the train. Do not want to detach. I want to be in the present. I want to hear and smell and see everything that as it happens in real time, my friend.
But see, I like the iPod in the gym and on the subway because it gives it more of a soundtrack.
No, I know. I used to do that when I smoked pot a lot, you know, because I was like, hey, man, this is all moving. It's all for me. And yeah. But the problem is when I'm listening to music on the treadmill, the same thing happens. I only use it. It does. After a certain point, I'm just using it to figure out how much time I got left on the treadmill. You know what I mean? It's like,
that's the perfect thing to use it for.
I know. By the end of the next song, I should be halfway done.
Yep. Right. That works. And all before right. You know it, you are done. It always works, I think.
Oh yeah. So let's go away now.
Shall we?
Yeah. I think we're.
Where are we going?
Maybe. Let's just leave Kayla on the mic.
Let's go drum somewhere.
We'll just leave Kayla alone in the studio. But you know how long it would be before Pashman came in here? It would be a matter of seconds. They're not here. Wait. Put me on.
Pashman in the morning.
We will be back to talk about the Bush policy summit and probably have some more fun if that's okay with some of you. I know it's just
let's hope
making some of them crazy. They're like, oh, they're just, you know what? They're part of the problem. 13 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Everybody's here. Kayla's on the board. Clutch Larson in the booth. P.W. McDonald in the booth. Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman, is in the other room doing God knows what. Writing rules, thinking about things, getting worked up. We have a new intern that is shuffling through the halls.
Who, Elon?
Yeah, he's moving about. I don't know.
He'll be here shortly. Trust me. I can feel it in my bones.
Here we go. My therapist asked me to keep track of all my dreams. I'm going tomorrow. This is last night. I'm sitting across the desk from a serious-looking government official in a suit. He says, Mr. Maron, why do you want to be the new Homeland Security chief? I say, I'm a people person, and I don't like it when they get blown up. He says, what else? I say, what are the hours? 9 to 5? Something like that? Perfect. Plus, it seems like an easy gig. What did Ridge actually do anyways? Can you tell me that? He says, you're not cleared for that information. Now, Mr. Maron, I have to ask you some questions before we can seriously consider you as a candidate for the job. Shoot. Have you ever hired an illegal immigrant as a housekeeper or a nanny? No, but I could use one. Say, you should see my bedroom, dude. Ugly. Have you ever accepted unreported gifts of thousands of dollars in cash and other items from associates at a New Jersey construction company? No, but again, that sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty good to me. Have you ever used 3 police officers on a public payroll to do research for your own book about your mother who was a prostitute? Hey, pal, look, keep my mom out of this, all right? She may be with a jazz bow, but that's it. Have you ever had simultaneous extramarital affairs with 2 women? That's bad, right? I should say no, right? Have you ever had simultaneous extramarital affairs with 3 women? No, but I love the way you think, my friend. Have you ever had simultaneous extramarital affairs with 3 women and a man? No, but I've seen that one. Jenna Jameson was in that one, right? Am I wrong? Have you ever gotten coked up and randomly sprayed a nursing home with an Uzi? No, to the Uzi part, anyway. Have you ever traded arms for hostages? No. Have you ever had sexual relations with that woman? Oh, God, no. Have you ever dressed up as a birthday clown and murdered 33 teenage boys? Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Maron. You seem like an excellent candidate, but President Bush is still looking for a Latino woman. I woke up and my bed was filled with prepositions.
Ooh.
Let's hear the, faux Christian, AWOL, ex-blow monkey, puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult on Social Security yesterday.
While benefits for today's seniors are secure, the system is headed towards bankruptcy down the road. If we do not act soon, Social Security will not be there for our children and grandchildren.
Where's it going to land?
Oh,
sorry, no benefits for you, Grandma. Thanks for coming to the U.S. government casino. I guess it wasn't yesterday, but that was a couple of days ago. It's fresh, December 11th, fresh out of the puppet's mouth. So what do you think, man? So it seems to me that that what they're saying, they keep saying, I personally like that thing that David K. Johnson said on our show 3 days ago, and I'm going to play it again, because that dude, you know, he was very clear and he's very accessible. Can we hear that, Chris?
Here's a simple question. Why do we need a big new government program that will generate all these fees for brokers on Wall Street? Why not simply say, here's your 4 percentage points. You can keep an extra $1,000 a year from Social Security, and you can save it for the future, and you can invest it if you want. You can go spend it, and if you do, well, when you're old and you're hungry and out on the street, we don't care.
Or else you can let us have it. Can we hear that other cut of him? Because he basically says in this other cut, David K. Johnson, an economist, about how there's really no way that taxes won't be raised and that this thing is a sham.
Mm-hmm. The investment world out there will tell you that until an account has $5,000 in it, they don't make any money on it.
Right.
So the first 5 years, you put $1,000 in it, and you won't be able to do that unless you're making around $50,000 a year. They're not going to make any money on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to eat into the value of your fund, or as taxpayers, you're going to have to pay for it.
So the only people that really make out in this, outside of the rich, as usual, are, you know, brokers and bankers. And the people that, you know, why don't they just give us some money? I'd rather take the $1,000, I'd rather take the $1,000, stick it in my mattress, and do something else with it.
Because there's another agenda here. That's
okay.
Why. The agenda is the eventual end of Social Security as we now know it. They're not going to stop at simply allowing, 4%? Of someone's Social Security payment to be used or sunk into a private account. The ultimate goal here is to eliminate Social Security and many of the other New Deal programs because they have a philosophical problem with the idea that the Congress of the United States many years ago forced employers to contribute to Social Security. That's where their problem is.
So they're against what they see as liberal policy as being money drains on the government or the government being too big. Right?
Well, they see it as a drain on people that they think are just like them making as much money as they think they can. That's the problem. This is all about the rich getting richer. These folks, first of all, the rich don't pay that much. I mean, the bottom line is the limit on Social Security payments is $90,000. If you make $300,000, you're not paying any more than you would if you were making $90,000.
And also Medicaid's another example. The Bush administration has indicated its willingness to slash Medicaid, the nation's largest health care program for poor and disabled Americans, in order to address the massive budget deficits caused by these tax cuts for the wealthy.
That's right.
And he wants to cut Social Security and privatize that. And you know, it turns out that, you know, that their companies are rapidly cutting health benefits around the planet here, around the country. Big corporations are cutting people out of their health benefits. Some people who are retired. I mean, it's baffling. I mean, there's every indication that it's weird that the religious, fanatical, marginalized, you know, ideological base of this party, not the fiscally conservatives, but the neo-Christo-fascist zombie battalions who are fighting against putting evolution in textbooks. And these guys, as I've said before, believe in evolution. They really think that the poor, the elderly, the disabled will just adapt to whatever crap they put them through, however they make their life more difficult by depleting the resources for those people.
Well, they are going to continue to deplete those resources. They're going to continue to allow employers. Remember, Mark, there is no law on the books in America that requires an employer to provide health benefits. That's their choice. And it's, of course, the choice of the potential employee whether they want to join a firm.
There are 45 million uninsured Americans.
That's right. And those are many of them are working uninsured Americans.
Right. And the number of Americans who have lost their health insurance during this president, you know, and this is an increasing number, is 5 million now.
Yeah. And it's going to continue to increase because on that level, Bush is not. He wants this whole pride of ownership thing, which I'm sure somebody in there, Rove or one of those big thinkers they have, that they figure, let's try and figure out a way to put all of this stuff together that'll make it palatable to the American people. So he puts it in the context of ownership. Ownership of a piece of your Social Security money. Ownership of this. Ownership of that. And the bottom line is he takes the federal government out of the business of guaranteeing these safety nets for the American people.
But the flip side of the pride of ownership is obviously the shame of debt, because these guys, everybody who buys into this, the people who don't have the money, are going to be turned out. by these privatizers and by just the debt that they're going to accrue just by being part of this system.
And the Bush administration figures that's their problem. And they're going to have this, and I'm not talking about the Bush administration's problem, I'm talking about that they figure that's people's problem. It is a rough world out here, Mark Maron, and you know, the Bush administration figures if you're not prepared to play the game the way the game has to be played, you're, I guess, out of luck.
Well, you know, do you know how many new initiatives were proposed by George W. Bush to help more Americans gain access to affordable health care?
In what year? You mean before he got elected president?
Ever.
Well, you mean how many have... Since he's become president.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's zero.
Yeah.
That would be
baffling.
Done.
And this whole, all this Medicaid stuff, really, because they're like you were talking about yesterday, he's going to make it a state problem.
Yes. Okay. He will pass the cost when the federal government, it's like anything else, like a transit system, for example. When the federal government cuts transit money to municipalities like New York, they can't just close down the subway, right?
Right.
So who picks up the cost?
We do.
We do. Exactly. Right. And that's exactly what's going to happen with Medicaid. He will cut the money to the states, and the states, not being able to completely eliminate the program, will have to pick up the slack. And guess who pays it out in taxes? Us.
Well, what are they going to do with all the people that benefit from these programs who are going to fall through the grates?
They don't care about people who fall through the cracks.
I know, but they're going to be on your streets. They're going to be in your yard. What, do they just expect them to, you know, devolve and enter the ocean again? I just don't understand what the long... What they do expect them to do is eventually die. You know, I mean, what else is there? I mean, you're cutting the life cycle on people that could be, you know, using these programs to have a better life, and they should have a better life, and they're not capable of getting that life without this assistance, and they're just going to fade away.
Yeah, they're going to fade away to park benches that are right in front of the New World Bank building, as I saw when I was in Washington over Thanksgiving.
These cuts kill. I mean, he's killing on both sides. He's killing the elderly by, you know, slashing their benefits and making it difficult for them to get access to the health and drugs that they need, and he's killing the kids in Iraq because of those policies. He's killing on both sides.
On both sides, and let's hope somebody figures that out. We're going to take some phone calls.
Are we?
Yes, we are. 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. We're going to talk a little bit about Christmas and a lot more when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
No.
With a mouthful of bagel, jelly and bagel and butter. All right. Well, lucky for you, we got a caller on the phone. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world and calls us every so often, as are the rest of you at 866-303-2270. I'll get your calls in just a second, but let's say good morning to our friend on Planet Bush, Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God is the boxing glove, and you're the speed bag. Bam!
Right.
Bring it on, Lord.
All right. All right. Today we're going to talk about the right wing's attempted dismantling of the New Deal, Lawton.
New Deal? Try old stealing,
Mark.
Oh,
come on.
It's high time that state-sponsored communism bit the dust.
Oh,
hey, Uncle Sam.
Come on.
Get your gay, greedy hands out of Lawton's pockets. Oh. That's what I say.
No, it's not. Lawton, the New Deal improved this country immeasurably. In the depth of the Depression, it helped millions of people in need, and it got them back on their feet, buddy.
Well, yeah, once they were on their feet, they had more mobility. So they were able to whine for handouts at more locations.
Oh, my God.
Gimme, gimme, gimme.
Look, listen to me. Before there was a New Deal, justices routinely struck down laws protecting workers and discouraging child labor, my friend.
And as a result, children have never been lazier. These days, you try to get a preschooler to work a 14-hour shift at the factory, he'd probably give you some line about, "Sorry, dude, I'd rather play Grand Theft Auto." Well, it makes me sad, that's all.
There's something wrong with you, Lawton. All right, before there was a New Deal, there was no such thing as workplace safety. Factories were free to pollute, and old people were generally poor when they retired. Do you really want our country to return? Do you really want our country to return to that time, Lawton?
Come on now, you're missing an important point here, buddy. Before Franklin Bolshevik Roosevelt began filling people's heads with polka dots and moonbeams, the American people were happy, all right? Nobody worried about workplace safety, losing an arm in a thresher or whatever. That was a badge of honor, you know? And folks didn't need a minimum wage to feed their families. Hell, Most of their kids just died in childbirth anyway.
Exactly. That's it.
And old people don't mind retiring poor. They were resourceful. They used to make their own adult diapers with nothing but dental floss and discarded funny paper.
Oh, my
God. They poop right on moon mullets.
Oh, my
Glorious
God. You know what? You know what, Lawton? There's something wrong with you, all right? Shouldn't our government be there to help people? I mean, don't you think it's important to have a safety net?
Okay.
Please, please.
Now, Mark, you know what happens?
What?
What happens when a high wire act in the circus doesn't have a safety net?
Uh-huh.
He plummets 50 feet to the floor and dies.
All
but
right.
It only takes about 2 seconds to sweep that fella up and make room for the clowns to come out and kick the crap out of each other. Which is, that's what everybody came to see in the first place. Come on, Mark. Even without a safety net, the circus goes on. Martin, what are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
I have no
idea. Circus.
It's the Christmas season. I'm trying to defend taking food away from kids.
Exactly.
And old people. I love the New Deal. The Grapes of Wrath always made me cry.
There you go. See?
Whenever there's a fight, so hungry people can eat, I'll be there.
There you go. See that?
Whenever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there.
See that? Look at that. You have a heart. I knew you had a heart. It's okay, buddy. Let it out, man. Come on over to the other side, buddy.
John Ford.
Okay. There you go. See? It's okay.
And Stuntman.
Yeah. See? You got a heart. You care about people. Yeah. What? What's the matter? What's up, buddy?
Old steel, old steel.
All right,
all
right.
Feet,
you know what?
Goodbye, Trotsky.
All right, thank you. All right,
yeah,
thank you very much, Wadden. All right, good. You
God
take care
loves
of
you.
All right.
Deal with it.
All right. Merry Christmas, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
Bennett in Brooklyn, how are you?
How you guys doing?
Great, okay, man. How you doing?
Oh, I love the show. Listen, I had a question, but first I wanted to just tell you, I was fell asleep on the couch last night reading The Nation, and I had this incredible dream that I have these little copies of the Constitution that I keep inside my my backpack.
Yeah.
In case I ever want to look at it, you know, and see what really is the law of this land. And in this dream, the Constitution had been banned. Everyone was a consumer zombie. And my girlfriend and I had to trek around looking for the warehouse that they had stockpiled them. And we were going to leaflet them through a glider.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So you had a dream that the Constitution was banned and everybody was a consumer zombie, and the mission that you and your girlfriend had to do in order to save the United States was find the warehouse where they were stockpiling the copies of the Constitution so you could rehand them out.
Exactly. Well, we were going to drop them from a glider.
From a glider, not a plane, not a crop duster, a glider. So that was
an
environmentally correct dream.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't think about that, but yeah.
Wow,
but
man.
When I woke up, the copy of The Nation was off my lap, and I freaked out. Everything was taken from me.
Well, I'll tell you something. You can rest reassured you have a liberal unconscious.
There you go.
at least you didn't have a dream you were banning the Constitution. That's what was your question? That's a great dream. Thanks for sharing that, Ben. What was your question?
My question is about Social Security. How does this now, I know Bush is out there, he's stumping for it, but how does the process actually work? How does it work through Congress to actually privatize it? And is there a chance of this being shut down because of the counterfeiting?
Okay, let me tell you, at least procedurally.
We'll tell you what we know, Bennett. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Procedurally, this will come up as legislation in the Congress.
Okay.
There's nothing about Social Security, as far as I know, that requires a constitutional amendment to get this done. So it will come up as a bill in Congress. Somebody will introduce it in the House. Somebody will introduce it in the Senate. They'll get it theoretically passed by both bodies. And then they're going to have to go into conference committee and hammer out a bill that they figure Bush will sign. It will likely be pretty close to what he's asking for, unless something else intervenes. Okay, now, you know, you've got the AARP, you've got some very big organizations.
Some serious resistance,
and there is resistance. That's why it was so interesting to hear people in Congress, his allies like Lindsey Graham and others, saying, you know, you better not really think about borrowing $2 trillion to make this happen.
Yeah.
See, because that's how much it's going to cost. Plus, you still have a problem with the numbers, with the growth numbers, because the whole bankruptcy scenario that Bush is putting forward assumes an annual growth rate of only 1%. Yet Bush himself is pressing and saying that his administration projects a growth rate of 3%.
Right.
And so which one is it?
Well, Krugman says, Bennett, Paul Krugman in a piece from last week or a week and a half ago said, quote, very little about the privatizer's position is honest. They come to bury Social Security, not to save it. They aren't sincerely concerned about the possibility that the system will someday fail. They're disturbed by the system's historic success. Social Security is a government program that works, a demonstration that a modest amount of taxing and spending can make people's lives better and more secure. And that's why they want to destroy it, because that means that they're not making enough money off it somehow.
Exactly. There's no way for any banker friends of people like George W. Bush to make a dime off Social Security unless this, quote, privatization thing goes through.
Yeah. And the thing is, you're talking about people who symbolically, you know, want to annihilate any progressive or liberal policy. I mean, these are people of the same ilk of the people that wanted to take Franklin Delano Roosevelt off the dime and put Reagan on it. That wasn't out of respect. That was a propaganda move meant to symbolize, that liberal ideas are dead in this country, and they were redesigning
yes.
the symbols of this country. So here we go. Stuart in
Fort Lauderdale.
How are you, Stuart?
A couple of things. One is, first of all, I'm surprised Lawton Smalls wasn't getting the presidential medal.
I just have to say,
it's outrageous that they would give George Kennan, who said, finding the weapons of mass destruction was a slam dunk. And Bremer, who, that little weasel, who weaseled Halliburton into billions of dollars
exactly.
of ripoffs. Okay, and... Tommy Franks, they make a big deal about his planning this invasion, and it's completely failed. It was a terrible failed effort, a terrible idea. He didn't listen to the general. I mean, well, I'm surprised Bush isn't giving the award to Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, Hitler, Heydrich, and Himmler. They had a good idea, too, but gee, it's too bad that, too bad they didn't kill more Jews, you know, or something like that.
Right. Well, what's surprising is he didn't just put one around his own neck and say, what the hell?
Yeah, right.
I'll take one, too. He does live in this alternate universe, and that's for sure, and everything that Stuart said is a very good point. We talked a little bit about it earlier, that, you know, what Kennan did was perpetrate a lie.
Yeah.
He facilitated an invasion by oversight, by not actually, you know, selling the idea and getting it through, that the intelligence was not only flawed, but that we were going to be attacked by terrorists, and that, you know, that part of his CIA... was responsible for that.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, after September 11th, all it took was a couple of trips out to Langley on the part of Dick Cheney, and, you know, the tenants' CIA's intelligence matched Bush's intelligence fantasy that led to the war in Iraq in the first place.
Right, exactly. So we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the actions that are being instigated or taken. You know, there's a propaganda movement on behalf of a marginalized group of fanatical Christians that are very well organized, have lots of websites, and are feeding on people's fears. We're going to talk about that. Are we going to keep some calls, Clutch, or what do you want to do? Okay, let's keep the calls. If you want to hold on, stay holding on. 866-303-2270. We'll take a couple of good ones, and we'll also talk about what I just talked about before, and I should stop talking. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
Past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That is Mark Riley right there.
Yes, it is.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We're taking a few calls, and we're going to talk about Christ and Christmas and holiday seasons and death in a minute. Wow. Stephanie in Atlanta, what are you doing? What's going on?
Hey, Stephanie.
I can't believe I'm on, actually. Breakfast ready. Love you guys. Air America Radio has been an anchor for us here.
Oh, good.
We really are saved by... hearing there are other people out there in the world who are just amazed at what's going on and really, really fighting to make some changes. But my question, I think it was sort of answered by one of the callers. I did have a question about whether or not this privatization of Social Security, rather, is a done deal. So I understand it does have to go through congressional legislative sort of procedures. But I was curious about who are some of the organizations besides AARP, and I'm not sure how I'm feeling about AARP right now. some of the organizations that are addressing this issue, because it seems as though the organizations that were involved in the elections are kind of focused now on breathing some life back into the Democratic Party, and they're not really paying attention to this very important piece of legislation that's happening. I think that Social Security is undermined. We're pretty much done.
Well, I don't think they're not legislating it yet.
No, they're not. They haven't gotten a proposal from Bush. But here's the problem: the Democrats, I think. Well, let's put it this way. They don't yet appear to be in a position to fight this and win. Not yet. Now, that doesn't mean they can't be. That doesn't mean that something won't happen. But right now, I think Stephanie's right. They seem to be focused on other things. They seem to be focused on healing and, you know, the party, et cetera, et cetera. And the fact is that this Social Security fight is going to be an extremely, extremely important one.
Yeah.
Because, and we talked about this briefly yesterday, Mark. You have a generation of Americans ages 25 to approximately 40 who have been told all their working lives that Social Security was in crisis. This isn't Bush isn't the first person to say this. They were saying this back in the 1980s. The same people who really had a problem with Social Security in the first place. So what they've done by, again, framing the language, as George Lakoff says, they have framed the debate for these 25 to 40-year-olds. They believe with every fiber of their being that Social Security is about to go broke, and it will go broke so they don't get paid.
Yeah.
So they've made it. Not only have they managed to make the system in crisis when maybe it's not, they've also made a specific group of people very nervous that they're going to be hurt. And the only thing that they see now holding out any hope is allowing these people, because, again, they're playing to the idea that a lot of these kids came up during periods, like, for example, in the 1980s, when there was a lot of activity on the stock market. So they say, okay, well, why not let these people supplement the Social Security money by...
putting it on red. No, 17. Gotcha. 17.
17.
John in Sacramento. How are you, John? What's on your mind?
Oh, you don't want to hear this.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah. Kinda.
I'm not going to even say my last name, okay?
We were
I'll tell you one thing right up.
Yeah.
My dad's a general. My grandfather is an audiologist, okay? My grandfather died a few years ago.
An ideologist?
Audiologist.
Oh, okay.
He was researching ways to cure deafness through microchips when he died.
Okay.
Now, listen up. When my grandpa died, a lot of very fine people showed up in Arizona to say, whoa, there goes one of the icons of America.
Mm-hmm.
One of those original liberal Democrats, where liberal was the L word that meant legal,
mm-hmm.
not lame.
Right. Okay.
Here's what happened. He was thrown out the door at 12 years old in Los Angeles in 1910. There was no Eleanor Roosevelt. Oh, sorry, Eleanor Roosevelt. Anyway, my point is, where's Christ in Christmas?
Uh-huh.
What Bush is doing with his right-wing fundamentalist, bam! I won't use that word.
Thank you.
And what he's doing is he's taking apart a system that has taken small children and given them the right to have a life. What I'm seeing in the streets of California now is small children starving to death. Is that cute? Merry Christmas. Have a nice day, little kid. Go away.
Uh-huh.
That is sick. Is that Republican? No, that's anti-American.
Okay.
What are we doing? We're doing an anti-Islamic jihad? No, we're creating an anti-American world.
Okay.
We've destroyed the dollar worldwide.
Okay.
Go to any store, everything's made in China. I thought China was a communist country.
All right, well,
not anymore. Not as long as they can do business with the United States. And that's really the central point here. The idea that America exists in a, quote, free market is one that's going to get severely tested over the next few years, as the Chinese, who have this extraordinary manufacturing capacity, remember, there's 1.5 billion of them.
Okay. I don't know. I'm still trying to get out of whatever world I was just sucked into for 2 minutes.
I don't know. You know, I wondered if he was, like, related to the late Morris Udall or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Dude, that guy was doing the big work, man. We traveled eons and distances there in about 45 seconds. Like, you know, you're just by the
listen up.
The tone of John's voice, I'm like, okay, what are we dealing with here? You don't want to hear this. And then I thought like he was going to say something bad other than he sort of took a jab at liberals, whatever. But, you know, the other thing, then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, no, I'm in his world.
Well, yes.
You know, like I'm like, what am I doing here in this weird apartment where this guy's awake doing the big work? You know what I mean?
He's in Sacramento, which means it's way early there.
But, you know, the thing that he's saying about China is this, of course, is a big season for the Chinese manufacturer.
Yes, this is big time. And listen, they may not celebrate Christmas, but they celebrate Christmas.
You know, I want to say a couple of things here, because obviously we're going to have to cover these Christmas stories, because these are important over the top of the next hour. But, you know, we got a poll here after the election and asked what they consider the most important problems facing the country today. The issue of values was tied for fourth place with unemployment and jobs, with only 1 in 10 of the Gallup sample choosing. Far ahead with 23% was the war in Iraq, followed by terrorism and the economy in general, both at 12% only, then followed by unemployment and values. Now, the weird thing is the modest vote for values is all the more surprising because it was broadly defined to include a wide range of concerns, including ethics, moral, religious, family, decline, dishonesty, life, integrity, blah, 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 blah. But what I'm saying here is that I want to make it clear from where we're sitting that the propaganda coming out of the religious right and the religious right in general is trying to convince, you know, religious or Christian people in general that they have some sort of mandate, that the bulk of America feels the way they feel, is anti-gay, is anti, you know, safe abortion, is anti, you know, evolution, is anti-fact-based education, is anti-freedom, reproductive freedom, is anti-human rights. They want us to believe that most of the people think about that, which is crazy. We're talking about a small contingent of this country that happens to have a lot of free time on their hands and a lot of people mobilized to create propaganda. You know, and there's a lot of propaganda coming out of these people. And I have, you know, there's I just, you know, I get worked up about it because, you know, people from our side get tweaked out in the head. But we are still dealing with a small group. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what they're trying to get done in certain parts of the South in terms of putting the Christ back into Christmas and how that steps on the toes of church and state separation.
Oh, it certainly does. And we're going to tell you how to fight to win when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron at 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes. Good morning to you, liberal Christians, Buddhists, all the Baha'i people out there, the Wiccans, Muslims and Lutherans, Protestants, and of course, evangelicals of all kinds. It is the holiday season, and we are all enjoying the holiday season.
Yeah.
Before we talk about the holiday season for everyone in a world where church and state is separated. You dig, man? It ain't all about Jesus Cristo here, understood? Okay, comprende? All right, dig this. I just want to do this right now because I want to solicit calls for the second segment. Apparently, polls find that most of Germany, France, and Spain sees U.S. citizens in an unfavorable light. But not, you know, just primarily because they now no longer believe that it's just our president, because our president got a majority of the people that voted. Some people think so, other people not so much. But the fact is that, yeah, this country, apparently plenty of them elected this guy or voted for this guy. So now people in these countries in Europe are just sort of like, you know what, I was willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. But now, you know what? You know, he stole the last one. But this one, a lot of people, they look at the numbers. They see 59 million people voted for this dummy. So they're like, yeah, I'm not sure I like them anymore. They have generally, when polled, have a negative attitude about Americans, which was there already, but now it's sort of confirmed, Riley.
Well, yeah.
It's going there.
Yeah, I know. It's been accentuated by the fact that a lot of Europeans, particularly the Western European countries, cannot figure out what was on our collective minds giving this guy another 4 years. Now, the flip side of that, Mark, is, of course, Bush's supporters, most of them,
could care less
what anybody else in the world thinks. They don't. They see America. It begins with America. It ends with America. The 1.5 billion Chinese, screw them. Who needs them?
Yeah, especially since
Western Europe.
Since many of them don't have Jesus in Christmas.
There you go.
Hey, if you are European or you travel to Europe a lot and you have some insights into how people are feeling there or how you feel, 866-303-2270 is the number. We're going to take your call in the next segment. Right now, we want to talk about some stuff that's going on with Christian conservatives, with Christian fanatics, with the Christo-fascist zombies.
Zombie, there you go, zombie. That's what you want.
Christo-fascist zombie brigades and legal representations of the neocon death cult. These organizations and alliances include Parents Television Council, Focus on the Family, Christian Coalition, Moral Majority, the Rutherford Institute, Alliance Defense Fund, the Discovery Institute, Morality in Media, Parents' Rights USA, Campaign for Working Families, all front names for websites and alliances that want to break down the separation of church and state. They want to, you know, engage in a type of moral watchdogging and fascisting. Can I use that as a verb?
Sure.
People, you know, just, yeah, this is awful, as Chris Willipresta would say. Awful. It's awful what's going on. In Terrebonne, is that Terrebonne? Terrebonne Parish, Louisiana? An organization is petitioning to add Merry Christmas to the red-lighted season's greeting sign on the main government building and is selling yard signs that read, "We believe in God, Merry Christmas." What, you know, so what?
Why do you have to wear your religion on your sleeve? Do it in the home. That's where you celebrate Christmas or whatever holiday you choose to celebrate. That's where it should be kept. You go to church. You do it in school. Not in school. You do it in school, you got problems. You do it in these kinds of public places. It is not appropriate in a diverse society. I'm sorry.
You can do it, but I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, what do you got to make everybody do it for? Why does everyone have to be so offended that if a state or a city or a town uses holiday greetings or happy holidays just so they don't alienate what makes this country great, which is, i.e., you know, encouraging people of all types to engage in the process of being an American, you know, despite the nature of what they believe or what they don't believe. That's what church and state is. It's the freedom to believe in what you don't believe in the privacy of your home or in the streets or wherever you want, but you don't have to impose it on everybody, for God's sakes.
Listen,
ooh, I mean...
Listen, one of the guys in this article is quoted as saying, "We're not going to allow the country to continue this downward spiral to the left."
I love that. Downward and to the left. Down and to the left.
Down and to
not
the left.
Down to the left.
Let me see. Down to the left from here is L.A., isn't it?
I don't know. What does that mean?
Well, see, that's the whole point. There is a political undertone to all this. This isn't just about religion. This isn't just about, you know, the idea that someone's rights are being taken away because they can't put a gigantic nativity scene on the town square. Their problem is they believe that everyone should believe what they do. That's the core of the issue right there. They have no tolerance.
I'm tired of this sort of, you know, victim disposition of these Christian groups. Please, you guys haven't had it tough in America. Christ's sake. Yeah, take it easy. All right? You know, you can have your holiday, have the trees, have whatever you want. Just let the states and the towns and the country be multi-denominational, that, like it was constitutionally intended, you Christo-fascist zombies.
Yeah, you don't need to play the holiday music in your cubicle at work. Why don't you play the holiday musical in the music in your cubicle at home?
I like the end quote of this. You know, it's like, why not simply require stores owned by Jews to put a gold star in their ads and on their storefronts?
Yeah, right.
you know, it's just like, you can do all that stuff, but just, you know, why don't you just shut it? Shut up. We don't all want to live like you. And there's this idea that, you know, the majority of people believe what you believe. It's not true. You know, a lot of people, 70 million or so, didn't even vote, dummies. So they're secularists at least, or they don't even care.
They're secular hermits.
That's where they find their wedge. They know that they get me worked up, and they're this small little group of propagandists who have a lot of, you know, very ambitious people with too much free time on their hands because they got nothing better to do but try to figure out how I should live and what I should do. So they just spend all their time festering and trying to recruit people and make, you know, exploiting people's fear here, all right? But there's about 70 million people that are just sort of like, yeah, what's for lunch? I don't give a, you know, what do I care?
They're
you
taking away Christmas. That's what they tell people.
But I get mad at those people, too, because, you know, on some level, we've got to stand up to this because a lot of people are infiltrating local governments, as we said. We've got to mobilize some people that aren't driven solely by religious delusion to get involved in the political process so we don't have to answer to delusional religious religion people. Religiouses. I tried to make,
Religiouses?
Yeah, that's right. Theocrats.
Well, I like fascist as a verb myself. You know, don't fascist that joint, my friend. I don't know.
All right, so we've got a lot of calls lining up about our European question. We've done what we can about religion right now. And I'm not trying to alienate Christians. You know, love thy, don't judge, you know, judge ye lest, all that stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Love it all.
Yeah, it's just saying.
And
you know,
I'm a Christian. Me and Maren get along fine.
I want to see, you know, things. Maybe they should do some weird kind of, you know.
Oh, see, there you go. Don't think about it. I was thinking of something. I was thinking about, like, dressing up in, like, you know, red and green and like, you know, completely lit up so that I could be my own personal billboard for Christmas. That's what they want.
My brain just went to this weird place where I wanted to have a multi-denominational ornament of some kind. I saw, like, Jesus crucified on a menorah wearing some sort of Islamic headgear. it's the top of a Christmas tree that was on fire.
Wow.
Hey, man. A lot of stuff. Anyways, we got calls lining up from Europeans or people that travel to Europe about what's going on in the and how people are seeing us over there, what they think. And we've got a guest coming up, too. Later in the show, we've got this cat, Philip Milano. He's the author of I Can't Believe You Asked That. This is a whole book, or I guess it's probably a website as well. I got to check that out. But we've got the book.
Yeah.
It's just uncomfortable questions.
Yeah, he doesn't care what we think about the questions that he asks.
Race, gender, sexuality, handicapped people. It's a bizarre book. So we'll be back with your calls at 866-303-2270 after this. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 20 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
Just want to give you a heads up. Our guest coming up in the next half hour, Philip Milano, author of I Can't Believe You Asked That, is a question and answer guy, sort of like a Dear Abby kind of deal, but, you know, really provocative questions, I guess. And his website is yforum.com. If you want to go check that out, see what it's all about, because we're going to be taking questions from you guys in the last segment of the show, so I'm just giving you that heads up. Before we get to the calls, I'd like to do the Palm Pilot today, which was brought to us by Ramon wearing a too-tight police outfit.
It's
more like a dancing outfit, but I can't ask any questions. He was sweating. Anyways, this is Bernie Kerik's Palm Pilot for today. 6 a.m., wake up, check perimeter for intruders, taser anything that moves, and that means you, Channel 7. 9 a.m., free time, pull out the old Andrew Dice Clay records. Hickory Dickory Dock. Oh! 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., sit around in my undershirt. This is much better than being Homeland Security Chief. 2 p.m., check answering machine to see if any of my girlfriends called. No, why haven't they called? I'm frickin' Bernie Kerik. Oh! 4 p.m., lunch with fellas. The Chin, Johnny Two Times, Pete the Killer, Little Petey, Big Little Petey, Joey No Nads, and the Honorable Rudolph Giuliani. Note, put on a shirt. 7 p.m., dinner, taser sausage roll. Note, take off shirt. 9 p.m., go to Bada Bing, see if any of the dancers recognize me. I'm Bernie frickin' Kerik. Oh! Oh!
Ooh,
quick email on topic. We're talking to Europeans about the evolving impression of Americans because of the re-election of the neocon death cults, Cheney regime's monkey puppet. Blow, you know what I'm saying. Many of us feel so alienated. This is from somebody, James, living in the United Kingdom. Many of us feel so alienated by Bush and Blair that we fail to distinguish the American people from the policies of the country. Listening to Air America and talking to American liberals on the Internet has made me realize that to label all Americans in the same vein as President Bush is unfair stereotyping. Well, thank God he likes us.
Well, can he do anything about the exchange rate, pal?
Hey,
how about it? I'm going over there.
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, he'll, could you please, James, could you help Mark Riley?
Yeah, could you help me out, James? Yeah. Maybe some Arsenal tickets, too, while you're at it.
Oh, boy. Now you're living up to the worst of it. Yeah. Can you get us something for nothing here? Where,
yeah, man, come on.
Well, you know, if it weren't for us, you know, you'd be speaking German now. Come
That's
on.
Right.
Anyways, how about Maura in Tennessee? Maura, how are you? You're an international consultant, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
Hi, Maura.
Trade Finance. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Okay. And what are you finding when you deal with the Europeans?
It is tough, I'll tell you. These countries, I mean, they understand that some of us have a different thinking, but they are just shaking their heads in shock and despair over this. I just wanted to say that, you know, all these neocons and whoever, this whole right-wing thing, with their isolationist policy, it's just leading to an economic crisis. For every $1 million in sales to customers overseas, it generates about 10 jobs here in the States.
Wow.
The way this president is running things, you know, countries overseas would rather buy elsewhere. They'd rather find suppliers in other European countries or countries where they're not as, you know, stupid as we are, excuse me, but, you know. The weak dollar that we've got right now, as Mark was just saying, it's just heinous. It's so painful to buy from overseas or even, you know, any of that. It's a real difficult situation. It's leading to an economic crisis.
I'll tell you something. I'm bringing everything with me, okay? Everything that I can find. The only thing I know you can't bring meat into the United Kingdom, but otherwise I'm trying to bring all the supplies here from in the States, so I don't have to spend too much money over in London.
My husband's family is over there. He's actually from England. And I think right now the exchange rate is something like, I don't know, it's like $1.92 for a dollar.
Which means out in the street it's 2-1.
Oh, it's just, I've never had it that way. I've been married to him for 12 years. It's never been like this, never.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Maura.
Appreciate it, Maura.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a piece right here in front of me that says America is about to become a net food importer for the first time in generations, that the trade imbalance that is going on is really hurting our economy, and also the isolation thing she's talking about. It's like it's making the people of this country, you know, a lot of them narrow-minded, the ones that repelled that way anyways, and then a bully abroad completely.
Yeah,
you know, not unwilling to compromise or negotiate or even respect anybody.
Well, yeah, and it gets to that whole, we're going to go it alone, we're going to do this our way, and if you don't like it, later for you. Well, that also happens when some of these countries start thinking about their investments inside the United States. Now, with the dollar fading, you know, like real fast, it's really cheap to invest in the United States now, but there are some people in some parts of the world that those very political reasons. They don't want to invest in a country that doesn't think anybody else exists in the world but them.
On principle, they won't invest in the United States of America.
Yep.
What have these
Where they could
done?
Make some good money.
What have they done? Pat in Finland. How are you, Pat?
What's Hi, it, Pat.
What's it like in Finland?
It's a little bit cold at the moment.
Is it like dark now or is it nice?
Yeah, it's black. It's 3:30 in the afternoon.
3:30 in the afternoon, it's pitch black?
Yeah.
Are you going crazy?
A little bit, but crazy anyway.
So what's on your mind, buddy?
It's an interesting conversation. I've actually been waiting for it to come up for some time. You know, the things that happened in the post-war years and everything about the CIA and were they involved in this and everything, these were all like tongue-in-cheek type things. And I don't think anybody ever really believed everything about Americans. I mean, they sort of grudgingly liked them or instead of an envy there. But that seems to have all gone now. And really, seriously, if you look at statesmen in Europe, political figures in Europe, Berlusconi aside, of course, there is a statesmanship there. There is a certain nobility about most of the politicians in Europe. Tony Blair would be at the top of the list. If you ever see him during question time in the House of Commons, isn't
Yeah, I watch
he's
that.
A very, he's a very quick, bright guy who is able to speak on things on many different levels simultaneously.
So it's equally surprising that he's taking the stance that he has. But when you see any of the figures in the U.S. government now, there's a maliciousness almost.
In basketball, black athletes seem to dominate.
Okay.
And I've got some answers here, but I'd be fascinated to see what people, because, man, it is a smorgasbord of
You know, I certainly like to engage a little non-PC here on the show. 866 is the number. The question is why black athletes seem to how would I phrase it?
Dominate certain sports. Yeah, because we don't dominate the National Hockey League, but then they're not playing. So, you see, you know, when we don't dominate, you see what happens.
Yeah, well, there's time. You know, pretty soon you'll be dominating there as well. So, 45 past the hour, call us up, 866-303-2270 is the number. We'll talk to you in a second. We're on the phone with Philip Milano here on Morning Sedition. That's Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron. It's 50 past the hour on Air America Radio. The book that Philip has put together here is I Can't Believe You Asked That, a no-holds-barred Q&A about race, sex, religion, and other terrifying topics, taken from www.yforum.com, a non-judgmental place to ask questions about race, gender, sex, age, and sexual orientation. The book is available on our website at morningsedition.com. We're taking your call at 866-303-2270. The question at hand is why do blacks seem to dominate certain sports? We've got Kodak in a truck in North Carolina. Good morning, Kodak.
Hey, Kodak.
Yes, good morning, Mark and Mark. The reason I feel my wife and I were just having this discussion recently is that it's economics. We can see that the sports where require you to have a capital investment are the ones where you don't have as many blacks participating. Because we look at soccer, you have to have a lot of gear, you have to have a facility. The same thing about the swim team. You got to be part of a swim club or something along that nature.
Now wait a minute. Let me say something to you about soccer though. See, because soccer is played by some of the poorest kids on the planet. If you've ever been to Brazil, you will see kids that will play soccer with an improvised ball on an improvised field, and they'll play all day.
Hockey is the one I meant to say.
Oh, hockey. Yeah, hockey. Well, you do have to have some equipment for that.
Right. And see, then when you look at basketball and baseball, all you need is a group of guys, a ball, and a trash can, or a discarded milk carton. Same
right.
thing with the track and field. And the reason I think they excel at it because they see from the previous examples that it is a way out of their poverty, out of their present conditions. And
Kodak, is it part, do you think it's part cultural too or just economics?
I think it's basically economics. Going back to the thing about the barbecue versus having a socialized party where one person is the host. With the barbecue, you get together with a group of friends, and they bring some potato salad. Somebody else brings some greens. So I got the grill. There's an opportunity. Let's get done.
But you know what's interesting, too, Kodak? As we see things evolve, we see certain sports that do require a heavy capital investment. Golf and tennis, two examples. And you look at the Williams sisters, and you look at Tiger Woods. And by the way, the Williams sisters did not join a country club to learn how to play tennis. Their father had them playing on a court in Compton.
Well, but once again, though, exposure to that sport, any sports that I think it's economics. I don't think it's regardless.
Well, the Williamses weren't rich now. That's the whole point. They were not wealthy people. Tiger Woods' parents were not poor either. But the Williams family was not a wealthy family. They just simply concentrated their kids on tennis, and we see the result.
Thanks for your call, Kodak.
Do we want to talk about the really non-PC answers that were on the website?
Okay.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think Sports Illustrated had something that came out some time ago about this, and they kind of looked at all those issues that Kodak mentioned, but also the fact that there may be something to the fact that if we're talking about athletes at the very top of their game, there is very little that separates these athletes, you know, black from white.
Yeah.
And yet the African Americans can excel. And they were talking about that if you look closely at what they excel at, that sports that involve upper body strength, such as gymnastics or maybe a pitcher or someone like that, that you don't see the total domination of African Americans, but sports involving lower body strength and leg strength in particular, you'll see there being African Americans excelling. And they even brought up the fact that there might be something more common in African American, particularly men, is the ratio of the length of their upper thigh
versus the length of their total leg.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know,
so we're talking about some non-PC stuff there. And then, of course, there's Jimmy the Greek. You know what he said about
Jimmy the Greek and Al Campanis and that whole group. But, you know, it's interesting because when you start crossing that with some of the differences between African-Americans and African athletes,
yeah,
you see a very different thing going on.
I think we got a caller that wants to speak to that very issue. Marie in New Jersey, or Mary Marie, which is it?
It's Marie. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Marie.
There was a New Yorker article a while ago, and I was kind of pretty surprised myself to see this topic kind of tackled in a New Yorker article that basically said that Africa as a continent, compared to the other continents, has an enormous amount of genetic and linguistic diversity, and that they somehow thought that this was perhaps partly responsible, just given all the physical types in Africa. You would be more likely to find Africans kind of maximized for the demands of a particular sport.
Well, Mark Riley's got an interesting angle on that. Thanks for your call, Marie. What were we talking about on the break?
Well, you know, we were talking about the slave trade and the fact that most Africans who came to America came from Western as opposed to Eastern Africa, and that was just geographic.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that the slaves, the Western coast for the transatlantic slave trade, going to East Africa to try and capture slaves made no sense.
Right.
Because that was the easiest way to get across was from Western Africa. And there is a diversity in body type between West Africans and East Africans in sub-Saharan Africa.
Now, is this a politically incorrect path to go along in terms of physical acumen, the genetic history path?
Well, not if you've ever watched the Boston Marathon and watched the African guys win every year.
Yeah.
Well, and I think in the mainstream media, it's definitely politically incorrect to talk about actual biological differences among, you know, between and among the races. Absolutely.
Right. Well, yeah, Philip, we got to get out of here, and you know, it was great talking.
It was really nice. It was a good time, definitely. I was a little nervous about this segment before it started.
Hey, I'd love to do it again, guys. I appreciate the fact that I've got a left of center show that I can be on, because most of the shows I've been on are conservative. You know, they seem to want to mix it up more. So, you know, more power to you guys.
Well, thanks a lot. Philip J. Milano, creator of YForum.com. The book is I Can't Believe You Asked That, a no-holds-barred Q&A about race, sex, religion, and other terrifying topics.
Yeah.
I sometimes am out of the loop about, you know, I don't get the talking points. I don't get the PC talking points. Like, when I hang out with my friends on Tough Crowd and we go at each other, a lot of times I don't think about it. There are certain things that I have gut reactions to where I know in my heart that, you know, it's the wrong thing to ask, or it's not necessarily the appropriate thing to think, but a lot of times I just, you know, think, you know, people are people, and then the more we get this stuff out in the open, the more it disarms it.
Well, yeah, and I mean, there's a difference between asking questions and reinforcing stereotypes, and that's important.
Okay, here's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. I hope that Barbara is feeling better after her polyp removal.
Yeah.
One, cite Bernie Kerik as proof that not all Republicans are slaves to the idea of abstinence. Two, file sexual harassment suit against Jack Frost for nipping at your nose, because no means no. Three, it's award season. Nominate yourself something. Nominate yourself for the best something. Do it. Go ahead. Four, tell kids that just because the Grinch is a gay green man who lives with his dog and hates Christmas, that doesn't make him a bad person, merely a New Yorker. And five, today's phrase is drop it into conversation. I'm just going to start using euros for everything, man. The dollar is finished. It's over. Wake up, people. How clear does it have to be, man?
Stop torturing me, man.
All right, man.
Man, we're going to have another show tomorrow, like this one.
Better.
Let's hope. See you tomorrow on Air America Radio.
Bye.